Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening, you're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 9, Episode 6. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing four tales to terrify you, courtesy of author Keith McDuffie, about electronic evils, shortwave psychos, beleaguered bankers, and southern sleuths. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. When you've been driving for a while, sometimes it's nice to take a short break, get some rest, maybe have a bite to eat or charge that phone you forgot to bring a cord for. Of course, this is all well and good when you have something you're driving to, not from. In our first story from Keith McDuffie, we followed the trail of two professionals who are finding themselves followed by something that will not stop, and they're running out of options. Without further ado, I present to you As the Crow Flies. No coverage, not even one bar. Battery was dead anyway. It was still daytime, but it was overcast, and the sky had a perfectly even dullness, so there was no way to tell what time it was, much less which direction was north or south, or anything else, for that matter. A two-lane, blacked-up road snaked up into the distance and disappeared into some trees, or a forest, if you want to get technical about it. It also snaked down towards some lumpy hills and disappeared there as well. What sounded like a two-stroke chainsaw could be heard in the distance, but it was impossible to tell whether it was up at the forest or down in the lumpy hills. This had been happening more often lately. Two different ways to go, with a dead battery and no bars, and nobody left to blame. Blame was a coat worn by the man behind the wheel more often than not. Eyes from the passenger seat delivered daggers into him now. Chuck felt them as though they were made of steel. His hands draped over the upper edge of the windshield from the car's open top. Diane was thinking the same thing, he knew. This again was his fault. No getting out of it this time. Though, with Diane, he had never really gotten out of anything before. The answer was no. No, he had not. As if to certify their situation, Diane held her phone screen up to Chuck. It displayed a final red warning of low power, then winked off into darkness, showing only Chuck's dejection reflected into its glassy black surface. He shrugged one shoulder and smirked the same side of his mouth, just as he'd always done, either when feeling pretty pleased with himself, or after he royally screwed things up. Diane pursed her lips and rolled her eyes without a smile, more for being disappointed in herself than for his repeated ineptitude. It was clear now that backup would never come. Metallic plinks and pops sounded from beneath the hood of the car, gasps of exhaustion from aging engine parts as they were permitted to cool from so many hours of exertion. So many miles. Had it been hundreds? 1,000? It certainly felt as many, and the knots within and sweats upon their backs said it all. There hadn't been a moment to stop, to not even consider it. Even now it seemed foolish, but they had to be sure. They had to stop and know for certain. A close sound from their left changed Chuck's expression sour. He turned his head to the sole dead tree beside the road that had no business remaining upright. Upon its dry, leafless branches, a pair of crows. One of them gurgled and ruffled its feathers, as the two seemed to almost mimic the human's position and movements, cocking heads to one side, then another, eyeing the other pair with growing curiosity. Where the crows remained indifferent to the humans, Chuck boiled with disgust. Since he was a child, he disliked the beasts. Carrier feeders, bringers of nightmares and bad omens, pets to the undead, pests to the living, down to their disgusting birdsong, if you wanted to call it that, nothing about them was good. Dislike wasn't quite the way Chuck felt about them now. Hatred was a more accurate term. They were, of all places, here and now. Not at all a good sign. As though sensing Chuck's moment of distaste, the leftmost crow, cawed, extended its black wings and took flight. It descended upon something dead center of the pavement 100 meters or so down the road ahead. A lifeless rabbit, or some other unfortunate flattened creature, now a meal for one of the feathered beasts of the damned. A cold early spring breeze brushed across the Eldorado's open top, carrying a few strands of Diane's raven hair to rest upon the bridge of her nose, and along with it, the sound once more of the machine. Both of the agents turned toward the trees, or forest, or whatever you wanted to call it, up and behind them. It was clear now where it was coming from. Now they knew. The machine was moving again. just above the trees, they could see it now. A minuscule black dot against the matte gray, appearing high above the distant swaying pines. Its motors whined in protest as it worked to steady itself against increasing winds. Just visible in the daylight were the lights of its bluish eyes, cameras, if you wanted to get technical about it. The Eldorado's engine gunned to life. Diane hadn't time to settle herself back into the leather before Chuck's hands fell to the steering wheel, the clutch released, and their cherry red ride lurched forward and down the road, leaving behind white clouds of expended tires. The distant motors behind them seemed to match their movement, screaming with acceleration and heated purpose. Chuck's eyes fell squarely upon the upturned rearview mirror as he shifted into second, keeping the distant black and blue dot in sight. Within heartbeats, the object left his view, the steering wheel suddenly pulling to the right, the car involuntarily veering into the same direction and onto the dirt shoulder. The once feasting crow fluttered just above their heads and threw the dust cloud around them, cawing in alarm. As Chuck pulled back onto the pavement, he had time to catch sight of Diane's retreating hand from the wheel. Now it was her turn to feel daggers. The car retained its distance from the machine as they approached the hills, the road winding through them into territory of which they had no clue. For Chuck and Diane, this was indeed new territory, at least in the current context. Hundreds of miles upon a long, straight road had kept the separation between them and the machine a comfortable assurance. The serpentine length of pavement ahead was about to cut the feeling short in a most literal sense. A tall hill of reddish-brown dirt and rock akin to a Martian landscape filled the rear view as the Eldorado swerved into the first bend. Diane glanced behind them, then back to Chuck, her look confirming that they were now blind to the machine's whereabouts. With each turn of the wheel, their saved distance dwindled. Their time grew shorter. The accelerator once again fell to the floor. Rubber screamed in protest as the car took the next bend with little deceleration. Only a half kilometer more came the next, then another, past a well-worn dirt road on the left. The seemingly unending slaloming sapped precious distance away from the machine with every turn. Chuck began to think they may as well have stayed put where they were, let the thing approach them with ease and without resistance. Lay back and let go. Let the crows see their damning handiwork come to fruition, reflected in their dead black eyes. Then feast for days in the scattered aftermath, all amongst what would be a twisted ruin of cherry red metal alongside some godforsaken tree in the middle of nowhere, under a gray and lifeless sky. Quitting hadn't been an option before. It hadn't been close to consideration. The agency had a hand in putting such nonsense out of its members' minds in the most effective manner. There was keen encouragement on their part for seeing a job through. Incentive was one way to put it. Another was intimidation. Threats. Failure, as it turned out, was also not on the table. But with nothing left for either of them out there at this point, what carrots were there left to dangle over their noses? What blackmail mattered? What was left to happen beyond going to the beyond? Not a goddamn thing. Except he couldn't do this to Diane. He couldn't do this to the Eldorado. A hand on his shoulder turned Chuck's attention off his thoughts and of the road. Diane extended a finger at something beyond the grit-streaked windshield, just up ahead and before the next turn. A dilapidated wooden structure, its aged, weathered beams protesting under the weight of the hill above it. Complete darkness yawned from within the tunnel it housed. A mine shaft, long since abandoned, in an age when things like the Eldorado, and most certainly the machine, had no place. The car's wheel turned once more, out of the next turn and toward the tunnel's gaping maw. Though it was clear to be wide and tall enough to swallow even a commuter bus, the two agents braced themselves as the car fell out of the warm, muted sunlight and into the cold darkness. Echoes of gunning 8-cylinders pounded the stone walls before being joined by the sound of tires sliding to a stop along a dirt floor. A click of a key being turned, then all but the metallic plinks and pops and nervous breath of two cautious bodies in the dark. Not a move now. Not another sound. Just the wait. How many minutes had navigating through the hills shaved off their lead? 2? 10? Even seconds mattered. They knew this. And yet they had felt the need to stop and find out just how far ahead of the thing they'd come. It was that or run forever. Not once turning back until either fuel had run out or something else entirely had taken them out instead. Both agents turned back toward the diluted light streaming from the rectangular tunnel entrance. Tiny motes gave substance to the sunbeams, twinkling in the stale air like so many fireflies in a summer night sky. By their angle, it was close to noon, and the cloud cover had begun to dissipate. This was good. Knowing the sun's position meant they'd know which direction to turn. For all they knew, these hellish hills brought them even further from where they needed to be. In the short term, however, that place was away from them, away from the machine. An immense shadow swept along the ground outside, carried along by the chainsaw-like sounds they'd heard so many times before. Only now, as the thing grew closer, its sounds grew more intense and defined. Its metallic rotors whistled and cut the midday air like a giant scimitar, though it still kept itself high above the hills. A downward-beaten wind cast a whirlwind of sand beneath its path. Chuck and Diane shielded their eyes from the blast brought into the tunnel. As quickly as the machine had come, it was gone, its sounds echoing against the surrounding landscape and dwindling to silence. Chuck grasped the car key still in the ignition, but Diane seized his hand and gave him a look of exasperation. She had wanted to think he knew better than to be so quick to assume anything these past few days. Though disappointed in herself at the thought, she felt relieved in not assuming anything about Chuck's better judgment at the moment. She nodded her head toward the tunnel's opening, then released her partner's hand and slid out of the car over the passenger side door. On any other excursion like this, taking a weapon would have been a good idea, but here they'd become as useless as their now powerless phones. No ammunition, no juice, all expended in vain, modifying each of their holstered pieces and the small arsenal in the trunk of the Eldorado into pricey paperweights. Even with bullets, they'd been just as effective. The machines, as they'd learned, were not vulnerable from below. So far, only running seemed to work. Now that was being called into question. Diane shielded her eyes as she angled her head out into the sunlight, peering up into the brightening sky. A line of cloud cover stretched into the distance, cutting the sky in half at its seam. A breath of wind carried with it more unsettled dust, along with the distant cry of the now airborne crows. Of the machine there was not a whisper. She wasted no time in trotting back to the car, leaping back into the passenger seat and giving Chuck an affirmative nod. The car once again rumbled to life, its ignited roar near deafening within the confines of their dark refuge. Chuck backed out of the narrow opening with precision, the Eldorado exiting from within the blanket of white veil of dirt and spent fuel, like a bullet from one of their useless guns. It squealed as it came to a stop in the pavement, then again as the gears ground forward. The car remained there, stationary within the dissipating cloud, as its occupants contemplated the next move in silence and haste. Chuck once again brought the pedal down and turned the Eldorado back up the road from whence they'd come moments before. Retaining their previous heading felt akin to leading a lamb to slaughter. Back through the forest? No chance. It's how they got lost in the first place, and it only brought them closer to the place they'd been trying to distance themselves from these past many hours. the dirt road they'd passed just down the road. It's all that made sense. The wheels hit the dirt road within only a few minutes, and only moments later did Diane realize their potentially grave error. As the car accelerated through the hills, back out into the open and along a straight road, soil became airborne and highlighted their passage like a signal fire. It was only a matter of time before someone would see, before it would see. They had to move fast. Signal fire be damned. Chuck's mind, though, was not with Diane's. What had it been? 5 years now? No, just four. 4 years on the job. 4 years he sat pilot to navigator with Diane in automobiles of all makes, models, and years. Though no job was ever the same, there were several constants that they both come to realize. One was that Chuck's tendency for getting lost was getting worse. Another was that neither of them knew to keep a cell phone charger on their person at all times. Most importantly, and in a most positive sense, Chuck never, ever let the Eldorado's tank run dry. Chuck quietly witnessed one of those constants becoming very much a variable in a most negative sense. The fuel needle flirted with the letter E. Diane gasped and stood in her seat before Chuck could voice this most disappointing discovery. He turned to see what had caught her attention. Far in the distance, he could see it too, a building. Not just a building, buildings, a town. A real, honest-to-God, holy moly on a cannoli town. Towns have people, power, a goddamn telephone, gasoline. As though sensing Chuck's next thought, Diane turned behind them toward the receding hills. She took a moment to scan them, one hand serving as a visor from the sun directly overhead. She fell back into the seat, sighed, and shook her head. For now, it appeared, they were in the clear and the road ahead was a long and straight one. Minutes later, the Eldorado slowed to a trot and the air of positivity within the car was gone. It was an exaggeration to call the first structures that they encountered buildings. Those lining the town's outskirts stood as blackened husks of charred timber, having long ago succumbed to raging fires. No higher than 2 stories tall, their foundationless frames stood awkward and roofless, a wonder to be standing at all. The wreckage was of a lesser degree as they continued along the lifeless road. The town appeared to be quite large for the desolate area the agents found themselves in. Deserted shops lined the main road they traversed, their display windows left glassless and empty, but for the remnants of charred shelving. Further on were fewer blackened facades, though their condition was little improved. The sight was nothing new to the agents. They'd rolled through 2 others in worse condition only days before. There'd been nothing left but heaps of smoking ash, not just of buildings and houses. There'd been people, piles and piles of them, amassed together, rounded up before meeting their end. No one witnessing the other's demise. All for one and one for all, gone in one massively efficient flash. As they passed by one grouping of storefronts left remarkably intact, Chuck stopped the car and cut the engine. Before Diane could question the move, she'd spotted it too. Within the doorway of one shop lay the body of a man, his upper half sprawled out onto the sidewalk. Another pair of crows perched on his back, one picking at something beneath tattered clothes. The body's condition said it all. This was recent. This could have happened mere days ago. By all rights, it could have happened today. Chuck hadn't considered what might have killed the man before the agent flung himself out of the car and hurried toward the corpse. The crows scattered at the sound of his hurrying footsteps. Diane restrained herself from protesting, as she knew the fruitless yelling would only serve to further announce their presence to whoever or whatever was within earshot. It wasn't the body that most interested Chuck, at least not at the moment. It was the shop itself and what it could and most certainly at one time had, contained within. The dirtied, lopsided sign hanging from the ajar door said it all. Big Sal's Electronics and More. Cell phones, batteries, chargers. He couldn't give a piss about what more there might be than that. Inside there were no cell phones, no batteries, no chargers. Just more, nothing. Other than bare shelving, long since looted and mangled, and the poor sap laying face down in the doorway with a hole in his skull. What was his story? Had he been attempting to get some morsels for himself, crossing paths with other looters who had no concept or interest in sharing spoils? Had he walked in for help only to meet Big Sal and his most unhelpful Glock? Was this Big Sal? Chuck dropped to one knee and turned his body over. It didn't take much effort. Whoever it was couldn't have weighed more than 170, with unnaturally emaciated features that spelled out a story of long-term hunger, exhaustion, and misery. If this was the former shop owner, his moniker certainly didn't fit. Not anymore. His clothing fell loose about his body, flopping onto the sidewalk like a half-empty sack of rice. The man's torso was entirely painted in still congealing blood, a result of the massive exit wound in the face. He'd gotten it in the back and by the side of it not long ago. Something clattered to the ground, falling between Chuck's legs. He repositioned himself to see what it was, and right then and there everything he'd hoped for and risked in leaving the car for a small piece of wishful thinking had come to fruition. A cell phone. The green light from the portable battery charger connected to the cell phone glowed green. Chuck scooped up the phone and connected its charger. Rising to his feet and calling out to his partner, he was surprised to find his words swallowed up by a whole familiar, overbearing sound. Diane was out of the car now, shouting something and waving her arms, her own voice muffled by the deafening sounds of machinery overhead. It had found them. Diane plowed into Chuck, sending them both tumbling into the open doorway of the store. Outside, the sidewalk lit up in a blinding blaze of white light and flames, just where Chuck had stood, just where little Big Sal had lain. The resulting heat sent a gust of putrid air through the opening, and with it small embers of glowing pavement and scorched cadaver. The two hurried to their feet and distanced themselves from the doorway, stumbling over upturned shelving and piles of discarded packaging, long since relieved of their contents by looters. A dense, torrid wind exhaled in from behind them as the sound of the machine grew louder, even louder, lower, closer, carrying with it overwhelming stenches of charred flesh and asphalt. It would be on them in seconds. Diane shouted something to Chuck, her face dressed red with intensity, determination, and fear. Against the sound of the machine, of the ringing in their ears, this may as well have been whispering. She didn't wait for a response. She pulled him along by his arm as she retreated into the last few meters of the store, then shouldered through a door with every gram of their combined weight. It crashed open with little effort, the jam dismantled into long splinters. Wasting little momentum and taking little notice of their surroundings, the agents tore down the narrow back alley, vaulting mounds of uncollected refuse, demolished building debris and the occasional human body. They had no time to pay them any mind at all, for now their only concern was for themselves. The sound of the machine had dwindled some, but there was little doubt it had seen where they'd gone. Though their exposure was lessened, there was no longer protection overhead. Once again the machine's readings would register true, its altitude would be regained, and a lock would be achieved. One shot, two piles of ash. The alley seemed to stretch on for another 100 meters or so, then turned once left, then right, then left again. They began to feel trapped, as would two mice in a narrow maze. Diane continued to lead the way, disappearing around the corner, where the alley seemed to widen and leaving Chuck several paces behind. Ahead of him, Diane broke into an open street, where she froze in her tracks. He supposed she saw it, and it saw her. Though she looked all about her, she did not look up. Chuck was at full sprint and just about to the street when she saw Diane begin to raise her hands, and then the mass of people surrounding her, their guns raised. He felt there was no point in not matching Diane's pose of surrender, as the tattered crowd glared not with hostility, but with a sort of sense of mild unease. One of Chuck's raised hands carefully pointed skyward behind the congregation and just above the Eldorado in the distance. Most turned as the air once again became blanketed in a whirlwind of dust and debris, accompanied by the grating, otherworldly sounds of the machine's rotating blades. The agents were no longer of interest to the throng about them. The expressions worn amongst them all, agents and townfolk alike, told of a shared familiarity and helplessness. Time felt irrelevant and still. The agents, the people, the thing in the near-noon sky. Those on the ground felt transfixed and exposed, while the machine seemed to daze them all, choosing its most logical initial targets with its luminous, hateful, cerulean eyes. Chuck and Diane closed their own eyes, resigning themselves to let it come. They were ready for it to all be over. From beyond the darkness of their closed eyelids, another terrible sound filled the air. Loathsome warbles, horrendous, beastly cries. A pair of darting, dark shadows above, then a blinding burst of red and yellow flames. Unholy machinery grinding and ceasing, tearing downward and onto the open road to meet a dazzling, fiery end. Silence, then, but for the crackling of the heap once called a machine. The threat to them all, for now, was gone. Chuck shrugged one shoulder and smirked. They made their way through the crowd and back to the Eldorado, and as they approached it, a crow flew directly over their heads and landed on the hood, then looked at them. They stood some distance away and watched the crow watching them. Another crow flew directly overhead and landed beside it. The first crow squawked, then both flew away. They watched the crows disappear, looked at each other, and then got in the Eldorado. Only one way to go this time, with 5 bars and a full battery. I hope you enjoyed As the Crow Flies by author Keith McDuffie, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that first tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented feature author, you can help support them by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/McDuffie. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/MCDUFFEE. A no-sleep regular, Keith has something for the kiddies if you're planning on turning off the lights soon. But don't be worried. His many published works will help you if you are not. If you do decide to stop by the profile, please leave Keith a kind word and let him know you heard about him here on this show and that Otis Gyre sent you. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks again for your support of this program and of tonight's featured author. What a lucky gift there. It's said that crows are marvelously smart creatures and can even remember faces. Makes me wonder a bit if that mechanical monstrosity may have stepped on a relative or maybe owed them some money. Which reminds me, I have a few bills to take care of.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Do you hear a crackling in the air? No, it's fine. It's just the sound of my neighbor's CB radio. She's always jumping on that, reaching out to see who's out there. She's met a few people that way, I believe. But shame the last one didn't care much for sunlight. I think she keeps what's left of him on a mantle now. But at least she knows better than to pull pranks on it, like the troublemakers we're about to meet in our second Keith McDuffie story of the evening. Without further ado, I present to you 1020. Breaker 19. Bleep. Nothing. Breaker 19, anyone copy? Bleep. Glenn took a swipe at my hand as I attempted to key up the base station radio mic one more time. Give it up, he belched. You lost another one, man. He crumpled his empty can of MGD onto the table and left it to sit with the growing mountain of other fallen soldiers. This was our Saturday night. This was just about every Saturday night for the entirety of our latter teen years. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, no one else to talk to, really. Unless you counted Glenn's smart-ass twin sister, Marie, which I did not. And, of course, anyone listening on the CB airwaves. Glenn and I were the epitome of introversion. As much as we bellyached about wishing we knew of a party to crash every weekend, we'd inevitably find some excuse for why a night in Glenn's basement with a lukewarm case of beer was a much more preferable plan. Of course, a pair of pubescent boys, with nothing but a CB radio and a pre-internet computer at hand, are going to use MacGyver-like ingenuity to turn that seemingly harmless circuitry to entertaining use. And for a couple of dumbass troublemakers like us, I'm not talking about pulling another Jobs and Woz. Believe it or not, it was indeed possible to meet girls with a CB. Well, meet is not quite accurate. I can't say what any of them look like, mind you, but remember, we were horny teenagers with an absurd level of imagination when it came to visualizing women. And we weren't alone. Any rare time a girl's voice sounded in channel, you had 5-10 guys keying over each other to talk like unruly kids in a classroom. The key was finding the right time and place, then hope you had something cool enough to say to keep the conversation your own, usually taking it to a more private channel where the talk is less likely to get hijacked. What did we talk about? Well, the usual stuff, I guess. It never got to sex talk, if that's what you're thinking. I'm sure we wished it had. Mostly, we described what we looked like each time, with a growing amount of embellishment on both sides, I'm sure. What were our likes and dislikes? Where we went to school? What we were up to at the moment, usually with lies like working out on our side. Eventually, good nights would be said and radios would be silenced. It wasn't often we'd hear from the same girl again. Likely, they were bored one night and hopped on their dad's radio for a laugh. For them, the airwaves was not a place to hang out, not with the likes of losers like us. We didn't always troll the airwaves for girls. Sometimes we just wanted to talk with anyone. More times than I can count, we'd pull pranks. It was virtually anonymous, after all. Glenn not only had the massive base station radio in his basement, he had one wired up in the family van. The antenna he'd installed was so goddamn tall, we'd find ourselves removing it any time we entered a parking garage. Channel 19, or as CBers call it, 19, was at least known in the day as the Highway Channel. For the most part, it was the go-to channel for truckers and the like, though people looking for road assistance would hop on there as well. It made sense. Their best chance for help might be a passing truck hearing their call. Channel 9 was the one meant for emergencies, though it wasn't quite teeming with emergency crews at the ready. There was before the abundance of cell phones, mind you. But every now and then, one of his commoners would hop on 19 and at least initiate a conversation with someone, then carrying it on to a different channel, else hear the onslaught of angry, tired trucker curses. 19 was where I'd first heard JoJo Baby. That was her handle. I never got a real name. Probably Jody or something. She only knew me by mine, Blue Thunder. Glenn and I, well, mostly I, talked with her well into the previous Saturday night. It was going well, or so I thought. We'd moved the talk over to Channel 7. Tonight, she wasn't there. After a good couple hours calling out on 19, it was clear she wasn't there either. I pushed the mic aside and drained the last dregs of my beer. Glenn, ever ready with a reload, handed me another. "All right, so what now?" I said. "Maybe we should head out for once." "Can't. Marie's got the van tonight." As though to add insult to injury, the basement door flew open and there she stood. "Fork over the keys, Dumbo. Are you? Oh my God. Dad's going to kill you if he knows you guys are down here drinking." No. Who do you think bought it for us?" Glenn pulled the van key from his pocket and tossed it to his sister. Marie sighed. "Look at you two. Is that all you're going to do all night? Sit there and talk to weirdos on the radio?" "It's not like we can go anywhere," said Glenn. "The van?" "Like that would matter," she said. Glenn shrugged. "Fine. I'll tell you what. I can bring you and Sean to Sully's party. I just need to pick up Jill." "Sully?" Glenn said, irritated. He patted the half-empty case of beer. "He's a dick. We got a better party here, thanks." I gave him an incredulous look. "Dude, we..." "Breaker 19, breaker 19, the radio interrupted. "Sledgehammer for Dumbo. Dumbo, you copy? Over." Marie snickered. "Yeah, okay. Party already, tardies." Glenn threw an empty can in a direction. It clanged against the door as she left. "Wench." He rolled his chair closer to the CB and pulled the mic close. "Hey, Sledge, Dumbo, I copy. Let's take it to 15. Bleep. Can you please turn that damn base station bleep off and say over like the rest of us, man? All right, catch you on 15. Over." Sledgehammer was one of the few guys we knew with the radio, better known to us off the air as Walt Bowden. He and Glenn were known for monopolizing a channel for hours, ranting together about anything from girls uninterested in them to which was the superior antenna. Sometimes I'd chime in, but not this time. This time I'd rather be at Sully's party. I'd rather be talking to JoJo. Instead, I half-listened to Glenn and Walt as I proceeded to polish off the better half of that case. Between about my 7th and 8th beer, in the middle of my friend's mind-numbing argument concerning radios using quartz crystals versus ICs. "Breaker, 15, is that you, Dumbo? Over." A female voice said. "Oh, you don't want to be speaking with that lame-o," said Walt. "He'll only talk your ears off over crappy nerdy stuff all night while he's drinking crappier beer. Over." Sledgehammer only wishes he had beer at all. "Who's this? Bleep?" For about 10 seconds, there was no response. "See, you put her to sleep already," came Walt's voice. "I bet you even made Blue zonk out on the floor." I quickly shut my eyes and hung my tongue out over my mouth before Glenn turned around to look. An empty can bounced close to my face. "Whoa, hey! Hey, Dumbo, This is Sassy Kitten, over. The music from an unidentifiable boy band poisoned the background as she spoke. "Who the hell's Sassy Kitten?" I asked, sitting up. Glenn shook his head with a shrug as if to say, "Who cares? It's a girl, dumbass." "Hey there, Sassy. Where do I know you from?" "Bleep." "Well, you know I can't say my real name on here, but we go to school together, and, well, my girlfriend thinks you're hot." I laughed. "She's got to be talking about the cartoon elephant." "Oh, you get bent. What are you doing right now?" "Over." "Me and my buddy Blue Thunder are, you know, lifting, working out. Got us some beers, working out and drinking, you know." "Bleep." "Girl, you don't have a chance," Walt interrupted. "Those two geeks are a match made in heaven. Nothing comes between those lovers. You want to hook up? Talk to the sledgehammer. That's me. Over." "Damn it, Walt," Glenn muttered under his breath to the room. "So are you guys up for partying, you know, after your workout? You can hook up with my girlfriend, and I can hook up with Blue Thunder. Over." "Hell yes," I said. "Tell her yes." "No car?" "Who cares? We'll figure something out. Just go. Tell her yes." "Yeah, we're up for partying," Glenn said into the mic. "What's your 10:20? Bleep. Proceeding a barrage of humiliating, seemingly incessant girly laughter was the reply, now from a more familiar voice. "I'm in your perverted dreams, Dumbo." For several seconds, the channel was silent. Walt broke in laughing mid-roar. "Dumbo burned." "Damn it, Marie," Glenn yelled to the room. Dumbo, "you really are dumb," Glenn's sister said. All the while, more boy band music played in the background, intermixed with another girl's guffaws. "Seriously, working out?" "Yeah, maybe your right hand." "You are so dead when you get home, Marie." "Bleep." "Yeah, okay, whatever. You and Blue Ball is going to have fun working out. Over and out." I fell back onto my ass, dropping my chin to my chest, not so much feeling defeated as I was humiliated. It served to remind me that, more likely than not, people using CBs to meet people are imposters. Glenn, Walt, and I were no different. Marie just chose to be a lot more upfront about it. None of that seemed to stop me from clinging on to hope that there were genuinely honest people out there to talk to and perhaps even meet someday. I managed to get over myself and left the room to hit the head. When I got back, Glenn was no longer talking with Walt. Instead, he was slowly turning through the CB's 40 channels, coming up with not much more than static. "Come on, dude, can we do something else?" I said. "TV? Anything." Glenn's response was interrupted by the sound from a CB once its dial hit upon channel 15. "5, Bricker, 1-5, over." The signal was choppy, likely somewhat distant. The voice sounded abused, deep and tired, hoarse from likely too many cigarettes, too much booze, or both. "Breaker 1-5, over," came the voice again. No response. A sinister smile then grew on Glenn's face before he cleared his throat and keyed the mic. "Aw, come on, man, don't do it," I said, knowing what he intended to do. "Not this guy. I'm sorry, but, you know, Marie set me off, dude. And maybe I just want to balance the scales with this poor slob, since she's not around." "Go ahead, Breaker. Bleep," he said, though not in his usual voice. This time he did his best to sound like a woman, and damn it all, if he wasn't convincing. I heard him do this before, only it being to prank lonely teenage boys, not some gruff trucker who'd sooner plug a steel toe in his ass than sulk the whole thing off. "Hey there, darling, what's your 20? Over." "Oh, wouldn't you like to know? What's your handle, cutie?" "Bleep. This is Big Guy." "Who are you, honey?" "Over." Oh, I like that. Big guy. So manly. Bulip. Glenn let out a cackle and took a pull on his beer. I only shook my head and smirked. It was Glenn being Glenn. Or rather, Glenn not being Glenn. Your handle. Over. Tell him Jojo Brady, I said. What the hell, right? This is Jojo, baby. Bulip. Static. Glenn and I exchanged looks. You there, big guy? You know, I could really use a good lay tonight. You think you could help? Bulip. Again, for a good long minute, there was nothing. Glenn shrugged. All right, he said to the room. I guess let's see what's on T. You're not Jojo, baby. His voice now was a lot less friendly and much clearer. Glenn slid back over to the mic. That's what they call me, big guy. Bulip. What's your 20, Jojo, baby? Over. Oh, I don't know if I'm ready for that, big guy. We just barely met. How about I come to you, Bulip? You? Who are you, Jojo baby? No. What is your 20? Over. Glenn's voice was shaky now. Now behave, big guy, or I'll have to leave. You wouldn't want me to leave already now, would you? Bulip? The voice from the man known as Big Guy grew then from mild irritation to full-on absolute and honest rage. What is your 20? Where are you? I'll gut you. I'll gut your family. I reached over and quickly turned the CB's dial to a random channel, filling the room again with the sound of static. Jesus, Glenn said. What the hell was that? My stomach churned. You never know who you're going to meet on there, huh? Hey, you okay? Don't let Big Guy get to you, man. It was just some creep. Or not. We'll never know, right? He was right. We were all untraceable. Only found and seen if we wanted to be. If you don't want to hear from someone, you change the channel. Or maybe you never turn the CB on again. Either way, you move on. Like I guessed the real Jojo had done. Big guy, Glenn continued. Probably more like Tiny Dick. Turn on the TV. I guess let's see what's on. Best idea all night. Hello? Hello? Is anyone there? My eyes creaked open under eyelids like sandpaper. I pulled my arm out from under my cheek and checked my watch. About 2:30. I had no idea how long I'd been out. Judging by the hangover already setting in, it'd been a while. Hello? I sat up. Glenn was splayed out on the floor, his hands embracing the empty case, like a bedtime snuggie. He always was a lightweight. In front of me, a large digital number 18 glowed from the face of the CB. Anyone? Hello? I fumbled for the mic. Yeah. This is Blue Thunder, a copy. Bleep. Someone calling for help. This was rare. You occasionally catch a stranded motorist calling out for a tow truck on Channel 9, but this sounded dire. Oh, thank God. Please, I need help. Have you tried Channel 9? Police are sometimes monitoring there. Bulip? Yes, but no one's answering. Please, can you help me? Why were there no authorities monitoring Channel 9? Saturday night. Most likely they had DUIs to hand out, and a multitude of parties to break up. Hello, are you there? Came the woman's voice again. I'm here. Bulip. Oh, my God. Thank you. You have to help me. Glenn. I called out to the room. Glenn, wake up. You got to hear this. Out cold, I swung the chair around and gave him a kick. A low, loud, irritated groan followed. Oh, what the hell, man? Dude, listen. There's some chick on here looking for help. This is nuts. Listen. Are you still there? I called into the mic. What's your handle? Bulip? My what? My name is Christine. Can you help me, please? Glenn kicked at my chair. Oh, come on. She's on Channel 18. It's got to be Marie screwing with us again, dude. Does that sound like Marie or Jill? She says she came up empty on 9. What the hell, right? Let's see how it plays out. Glenn shrugged and sat up. What's your 20, Christine? I mean, your 10-20, your location. Bulip? I'm broken down off, I think, exit 17 somewhere. Off Route 2A in Eastboro. I stopped near a sign for St. Ambrose something. Eastboro, Glenn said. She's probably stuck out in the middle of the state forest. That's the cemetery. I asked, do you need us to call you a tow truck, Bulip? No, please, I don't have any money and I just need somebody to come pick me up and take me home. Please, I'll do anything. I'm so scared. Glenn and I exchanged looks with our eyebrows peaked. Hold on, Christine. Bulip. What do you think? I asked Glenn. He rubbed his hand under his sorry excuse for a beard. Maybe it's legit, maybe it's not. But it doesn't matter, right? Because we don't have wheels. He was right about that. There wasn't really anything we could do. Call the cops? I don't think that would ever occur to us. Where was the heroism in that, after all? Even if we had the van, neither of us was in any condition to drive. We didn't have many options. Oh, I know. Glenn was now on his feet. He gave me a shot in the arm. Sledge! Walt! We can have him pick us up, and we can all go check it out. It was almost 3 in the morning. He's still on? Well, worth a try. Christine, hold on, okay? We'll be right back. Bleep! Okay, please hurry. Glenn took control of the radio, switching the channel to 19. Breaker 1-9, Sledgehammer, you copy? Bleep! Yeah, what you want, Dumbo? You still want to argue you're realistic against my Cobra? Over. No, man, you need to come pick us up. We need to go check something out. Check what out? Will you just come pick us up? Not until you tell me what we're checking out. Over. Glenn looked at me, defeated. Go to 1-8. Bulip? Okay, roger. Turning the radio back to 18, we caught Christine mid-sentence, sounding frantic. Out there, Dumbo, hello? Yeah, I'm back. Sledge, you here? Bulip? I'm here. Who are we talking to? Over. This is Christine. I really need someone to come help me. I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere and I'm scared. Before you ask, Sledge, she doesn't want cops or anything like that. She just wants someone to come pick her up. She's over in Eastboro. Bulip? Well, I can do that. I'm only a few miles away. Over. I threw my head up and cursed at the ceiling. Glenn slammed his hand onto the mic's transmit button. Sledge, take it back to the last channel. Bleep. Back on 19, Glenn's tone grew clearly annoyed. Sledge, you there? Sledge? Bleep. Yeah, I'm here. What the hell's wrong with you? Over. Come pick us up, man. What? You're like miles out of the way. Why would I go and do that? Just come pick us up. Bleep. Walt laughed. What, you finally found a CB girlfriend? And you're afraid I'll steal her? What's her name? Jojo Baby? Or Wildflower? Or Jade Kisses? Won't they be jealous? All right, you two bozos scared them away. You're a sorry bunch, the two of you. The channel grew silent for a moment while we stewed on Walt's words. This girl's looking for help, and so I'm going to go help her. I'm heading back to 1-8, Walt said. Over. Of course, we followed. Breaker, 1-8, you there, Christine. Over. Dumbo? No, this is Sledgehammer. I'm close, so I'm going to come help you out. Can you give me your 20? Over. So, Dumbo's not coming? Nah, he's too far out and doesn't have a car. I'll take you where you need to go. Over. Okay. I'm near a place called St. Ambrose off 2A. I'm over. I know where that is. I'll be over in 10. Over. The following 10 minutes felt more like 20. Glenn and I spent most of it within the white noise of a CB static radio. I heard Wildflower maybe moved to California, Glenn mumbled, mostly to himself. Jade was just, I don't know. Anyway, I barely talked to her. Walt's voice broke in. Christine, you copy? Over. Yes, I'm here. I'm passing the sign for St. Ambrose. Where are you from here? Over. Just a little further. I see your headlights. Roger that. What the? For the next minute, there was nothing. Glenn and I looked at each other, brows furrowed and jaws slack. Glenn keyed the mic. Sledgehammer, you copy? What's going on? Bleep. Yeah, I'm here. Walt said, his voice sounding shaky. Christine, you copy? Over. Again, silence. Sledge, what's going on? Bleep. There's a truck out here. Like a big rig, this chick driving truck? Where the hell is she? No idea. Bleep. Okay, guess I'll go check it out. Be back in 5, over. 5 minutes passed. Then 10. 20. Static. Only static. Sledge, you copy? Bleep. Nothing. 30 minutes. The door to the room crashed open. I almost pissed myself. Into the room poured Glenn's sister, stinking of spent cigarettes and fruity liquor. Strawberry, maybe. Oh, my God. Marie slurred. You two are still trying to get laid on that thing? Piss off, Marie, Glenn said. Whatever. Fine, I'm snacking, then crashing. Wait, give me the van key. The what? The hell you want the keys for now? Party's way over. Come on, just give 'em. After several failed jabs at her coat for a pocket, she managed to slip her hand in and pull the key out. It clattered to the floor at her feet. Have at it, she said, before stumbling upstairs and sniggering like a stuffed-up wino. Glenn got to his feet and snatched up the keys. Well, he said, let's go. The ride to Eastboro was a decent 30 minutes from Glenn's house. Walt was right in not going out of his way to get us, if this girl, Christine, was really desperate for help. Throughout the entire ride, I took to using the van CB to reach out for Walt, Christine, anyone on Channel 18. No response, not a soul. Even our old haunt, Channel 19, had no one. Glenn slammed his hand onto the steering wheel. Damn it, Walt! The asshole probably turned his radio off. Why would he do that? Who knows? It's Walt. Selfish freaking Walt. Nothing was going on. I knew that. At least I knew nothing was happening in the way Glenn thought. If I was being completely honest with myself, I knew nothing ever could or would happen between a closed-up loser like me and another stranger of the opposite sex meeting anonymously on a CB radio on a weekend night, or any night. But it made me feel good, even just for an hour or two, or maybe over a couple of nights. And so, what if they essentially disappeared after that? We both had our fun, or at least I did, both pretending to be someone we're not, someone we want to be or appear to be, at least when only a voice is to be heard, and a story with a questionable degree of truth is to be told. And all of us were the same sort of loser. Glenn, Walt, me, all those girls we talked to, we were all the same. In the days before the internet, it wasn't silent words upon a screen that gave you anonymity. For us, it was the airwaves, with only a voice to identify you by. That anonymity was at least something you could count on. What came from that voice was as believable as you wanted it to be. At that hour, on a Sunday morning, the roads were clear. An occasional delivery truck blew past, heading the other direction. Glenn turned the van onto the exit 17 off-ramp, passing by only a few houses before plunging into the darkened State Forest Road. The cemetery, I knew, was under a mile ahead. I called into the mic. Breaker 19, Christine? Sledgehammer, you copy? Over. Glenn slowed the van as it passed by the closed gates of St. Ambrose. Walt's car was nowhere. No sign of his car nor a truck. Beyond the ornate walls was complete blackness, but for the light from the windows of the chapel and mausoleum. late night for visiting dead loved ones, I thought. Probably a priest preparing for visitors, in mass later that morning. Drive a little further, I said. There's a parking lot. Sean, he's not going to be there. They took off. No, look. Stopped in the middle of the parking lot was Walt's beat-up Monty. Exhaust still sputtered from the undercarriage as it idled, alone in the dark. Its driver's side door stood ajar, though the car's interior light was off. Beyond it were empty parking spaces and bordering woods. No sign of other vehicles, no sign of anyone. No sign of Walt. Glenn stopped the van 20 yards from Walt's car. Give him a shout, see if he's still in there. Sledge! Walt! You copy? This is Blue and Dumbo. We're behind you. Outside, I could hear my own voice echo back to me in the distance. Walt's radio was still on, with the volume turned up. Glenn rolled his window down and called out, Walt, stop messing around, man. Where's the girl? Christine, I said into the mic. Christine, do you copy? What's your 20? Over. Glenn stopped outside the van and slammed the door shut behind him with pissed-off force. I've had enough of your know-it-all crap, Walt. Stop it and come out. As Glenn stormed away toward the idling car, Christine's voice came over the CB. I'm here, Dumbo, but don't worry, I'm okay, she giggled. It was a feminine, girlish laugh, one of mischief and sex, and felt as though to go on for minutes. As she continued to transmit, her voice gradually deepened, as the giggle transformed to that of a laugh much more sinister and masculine. From the van CB, from Waltz, it was everywhere. What the hell is that? Glenn called back to the van as he continued to make his way to Walt's car. I threw up my hands and shrugged. The man on the CB continued transmitting, never stopping for our response. You guys are disgusting, you know that? Carrying on with poor ladies in distress, arguing about who's going to go and save the day because you think, what, you might get a piece of ass for doing so? Pathetic. It was Claire, who both voices belonged to, the man from Channel 19 from earlier that night. The enraged lunatic who went by the handle of Big Guy. Glenn, I called out my open window. It's that crazy nutball from earlier. Who? That crazy dude, Big Guy. He sent us out here for nothing. The real way to get anything from these girls, fellas, is the way I go about it. They don't want some stuffed-up nerds in their mommy's basement drinking poor papa's beer with barely enough hair in their balls to call themselves men. They want someone like me. They might not know it right away, but they catch on fast. Missy, Jennifer, Wildflower and Jade, Kisses, was it? Yeah, that was it. Glenn spun around. What? Did he say something about Jade? What the hell? He turned back to Walt's car, picking up his pace. Walt, come on, Bowden. Joanne was another story. She really did have a thing for limp dick geeks. Jojo? Yeah, that was her. Seems you were onto something with that one, Blue. Had to convince her I was you in order for her to come out and meet me. Hi, Jojo, baby. I think we should finally meet up. How about at the mall? How about that? Was I convincing? Whatever, not my best work, but it was enough for her. I tried transmitting a reply. Who is this? You're one sick freak, you know that? It was no use. He wasn't going to hear me. And his transmission was overpowering anything mobile. Unusual even for trucker's radio. This was base station level. Big Guy had the comm and he wasn't letting up. I watched as Glenn reached Walt's open door, then as he stumbled backward onto the pavement. Boys do pretty good impressions yourself, you know. But you do a terrible Jojo. She wasn't quite the slut you were making her out to be. But I had to be sure. Maybe she made it out of that dumpster. No? I knew that, but if there's one thing I hate more than loose ends, it's people screwing with me. Glenn was on his feet now, sprinting back to the van. He held a hand to his mouth, though all it did was delay what came forth onto the ground as he slammed against the driver's side door. It's Walt, Glenn said, catching his breath. He's strangled by his mic cord in there. His face is all blue and his tongue. He's dead, man. What? Are you sure? You must be wondering where I am right now. You want to know my 10-20, am I right? I was thinking the same thing about you, you know? Trying to nail down just where in the hell you pencil-necked swear hold up. Your pally there, Sledgehammer, is it? He was kind enough to tell me. Kind of had it stuck in his throat for a bit, so to speak. So I helped get it out of him. Glenn reached through the window and snatched the mic from my hand. You killed him. Why would you do that? You killed Walt. He was just a kid. Glenn, he's still transmitting. He can't hear you. He ignored me. Is there anyone there? Breaker 1-8? Breaker 1-8? Glenn let go of the mic, and Big Guy picked up mid-sentence. Would get your family? Well, gosh, I was just messing with you. But, you know, I hear that a sassy little kitten around here could maybe use some company, now that I've taken Papa Cat outside. Turn to Channel 9, I screamed. We need to call the cops or something. No, wait. Sassy kitten, Glenn said. Is he talking about... But he's not. I do want to thank you boys for reminding me that it's time for me to relocate. I don't need your godforsaken backwood towns. I sure as hell don't want them. It's time I embraced the new and said goodbye to the old, you know? Get myself, I don't know, a computer. Enough with this CB having to deal with you dumbass punks. Then I can be anywhere. Am I right? Can be from anywhere. Miles, miles away. The CB, well, it can only carry you so far. And any pervert can listen in on the whole thing. Like now, right? Just like I know where you are right now, Mr. Dumbo. Like I know you know my 20. Bleep. I hope you enjoyed 1020 by author Keith McDuffie, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed the tales you've heard tonight, I'd like to remind you one last time that tonight's featured author can be found by visiting our website. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com/McDuffie. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/MCDUFFE. If you can't find one story of his that you like, well, then try another. And another. And another. Oh, my. So many choices. As a reminder, if you decide to give any of this talented author's stories a read, please consider leaving them a quality review and a kind word, or a thoughtful public comment and an upvote. And be sure to let them know you heard about them here on this program, and that Otis Gyrie sent you. It means more to me than you can imagine, and I'm pretty sure Keith would much appreciate it also. Thanks again for your support of this show and of tonight's featured author. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page, or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference, and it would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases, and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyre channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Story Time, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram too. Just search for Otis Gyre. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep if you can.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I SkillsFutures.com.